Stripe helps many of the world's most influential companies grow their revenue and build a more profitable business. Whether it's Hertz making checkout a smooth ride for their customers, OpenAI answering unprecedented demand, or PGA chipping away at back office inefficiency, Stripe's financial infrastructure platform helps companies achieve ambitious goals. No matter what success looks like for your business, Stripe helps ensure the complexity of financial systems doesn't get in your way. Learn more at stripe.com.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
Now it's time for this.
News Talk's Executive Chair.
Thanks to Evershed Sutherland, Ireland's largest and most established global law firm, with full service teams for your legal and tax solutions.
I'm delighted to welcome to the Executive Chair, John Rooney. He's the Managing Director of Flowgas Ireland. John, you're very welcome to the programme.
Morning, Bobby. Nice to be here.
Now, John, you're born in Galway, but you grew up in Stillorgan, so that was an interesting transition. We nearly lost you to the culinary world because after your leaving cert, you worked in the kitchen for a summer but decided that the high-octane, high-pressure temperature of a kitchen was no longer for you and you decided to go another route.
Yeah, I think it was a combination of that plus the sack of onions and spuds I was given at 8 o'clock in the morning to start peeling. So it was pretty tough in the eyes. And I'll tell you, kitchen. I was always interested in cooking, or interested in the world of hospitality. And it was something I thought I wanted to do. But after literally 8 weeks in the Cluny Court, the Cluny Court Hotel, I said, no, this is not for me. So thankfully I did complete the CAO form and the leaving cert results came through and I got into commerce. So I decided to do a BCom instead.
So, and when you were doing commerce then, had you one eye on maybe a business career? I know a lot of your roles were sort of marketing led, weren't they?
Yeah, it was business, yeah. And I didn't know what type of business. I just thought, I liked the idea of getting into business. Maybe I knew what I didn't want to do. My dad is an engineer. I didn't want to be that. I wasn't really so keen on setting up my own business because I could just see this was during the mid 80s. I could see a lot of business failures and just the stress it put on people like my dad as well.
Yeah.
I was interested in people. So maybe HR or maybe marketing or whatever, but I didn't want to be an accountant either, even though I was reasonably good at figures. I just thought I wanted to be a bit more involved with people rather than numbers.
Yeah.
So I just sort of pursued what's called the general management stream in a BCom and then just first job.
And you've had a kind of a textbook career on that note. You know, 5 years with Jacobs, 5 years with Kellogg's, 4 years with Campbell Soups. Tell us a little bit about the roles that you did in those organisations.
Yeah, so Jacobs was my first sort of what I'd call structured marketing role. Prior to that, I had worked, I was selling 10-year boxes, corporate boxes and seats for the Croke Park development. So that was great, just getting out there selling. But it was probably a little bit unstructured. I was really on my own, just going driving around the country trying to sell those seats.
Yeah, but again, a bit of a good blooding in terms of hardcore sales. You
That's
know,
right. Yeah,
did you
yeah.
did you sell it or didn't you?
Yeah,
a lot of rejection dealing with all that. But
and I loved the buzz of the sale. You know, when I did sell a few seats, or a company would come back and say you were going to take that box, it was just the thrill of the sale. Really, you know, really sort of got me going. But it was, you know, like I say, a little bit unstructured, and I was keen to get into a company, maybe with a graduate program. But I was a bit late for that because I was this stage, I was 6-7 years out of college. So I just through the selling of the boxes and seats, I came across Jacobs. They were owned by Group Danone. Their marketing director at the time is a guy called Michael Carey, who went on.
No, I know Michael, yeah.
He's becoming well known. He's chairman of Enterprise Ireland. So he was setting up a new marketing team in Jacobs Biscuits. So that gave me that structure, that training about brand management, etc. So I did that for a few years. Kellogg's, again, was wonderful because it was very much focused on advertising and insights and really being in tune with what their consumers.
A well-oiled machine.
Yeah, so I went to Manchester for a few years and worked and there, what was their European head office there in Manchester. They've since moved that European head office to Dublin and I moved back with them and then went into Campbell Soup. Again, at that stage, what I missed most about from my time in Kellogg's was being in control of the product. So in Kellogg's in Ireland, we just literally just took the cornflakes, took the Special K in and did our best with marketing or sponsorship campaigns. Whereas with Campbell Soup, they had bought Aran Foods. So if we wanted to fine-tune the recipes, you know, maybe make a stronger tomato flavour or a different type of mushroom, you could do that. You could put on your white coat and work with the R&D team. So that's why I probably left Kellogg's to try and pursue that with Campbell's. And that was good as well. So
where are Campbell Soups based?
At the time, they had bought the old Aran Foods business down in Thurles.
Yeah.
It has subsequently been sold. And in fact, it was my first GM role or MD role in Campbell Soup, that they're an American organisation. They decided within about 6 months of me taking over that they wanted to sell the business. I don't know if it was a coincidence, but I then had to obviously go with the business. We were acquired by Premier Foods, who were a big British food company, who had also then subsequently acquired RHM Foods and Chivers here in Ireland. So I suppose putting it all together, they just rationalised, they closed down plants. They also had four MDs, they only needed one. So
right.
I moved on.
It's interesting, you know, and it happens most people at some juncture in their career, you know, either you do a big acquisition or you are an acquisition,
yep.
And things change.
Can do. Yep.
And they change,
yep.
Generally change pretty radically.
Yeah, particularly, you know, when you are the head person, you know, that's you're normally either the person leading the acquisition, or if you're the subject of the acquisition, you're usually potentially the first to go, because yeah. They usually have their own person in place. But look, it's fine. You know, you get a few quid out of it. I took a summer off, spent it in Cape Cod, and came back and then did something completely different. Right?
And before we get to Flowgas, so just tell me about Johnson Mooney and O'Brien again, a great brand.
Great brand, yeah.
A seasoned business, but did you enjoy your time there?
Super, yeah. It was great. A great way to learn about the importance of demand forecasting, of logistics. You know, bear in mind, bread has got a 5-day shelf life, and to be honest, if it doesn't sell within the first 3 days, it probably won't sell off the shelf.
Yeah.
So you cannot bake too much, because if you do, it'll be returned to you and you're feeding it to pigs. And equally, you've got to get your, you know, the cost of goods, you know, flour is quite volatile, and you've just got to get your hedging and your purchase quantities correct. So it was great grounding for that, particularly around logistics and getting the product to in front of the consumer at the right time.
Yeah. So you've been with Flowgas now since 2014. That's a business that's changed a lot over the years.
It has, yeah. I suppose it was initially set up back in the late 70s, just primarily as an LPG business, to take on, you know, some incumbents like Caller or Airgas. Ironically, we were DCC's first ever investment. So DCC had been set up just the year before Flowgas. But over the years, yeah, we even before I joined now, the team before me had established a fairly good foothold in the natural gas market and had got up to a decent market share. But it was mostly on the commercial side. And I think the feeling was, if we were going to grow residential or even grow our commercial, we needed to get into electricity. So I suppose just in the last 4 or 5 years now, we've got into electricity, initially with our own launch and then a couple of acquisitions. So between them all, we've grown now to be, become a full energy provider.
And what percentage of the business now is gas, in terms of how has that changed? Maybe when you started, it was probably close to 100%. And now
it was 100%. Yeah, between liquid gas or natural gas. Now it's probably still over about, say, it's about 60%.
Right.
But the electricity and solar and EV charging is catching up quite. And we would expect that by 2030. I mean, we certainly want to reduce, this is part of DCC's strategy of cleaner energy in your power. They've committed to their investors that they will double the size of their energy business worldwide, including Ireland, but also have the scope 3 or our customers' carbon emissions. So in order for us to do that, we need to grow our electricity primarily, and also we need to decarbonize our gas. So I would expect by 2030 that electricity will probably make up maybe 3/4 of our business, and gas will make up the final balance.
The electricity, as a consumer, the electricity space is interesting. Like, everybody sort of buys off the ESB, and then you've got all these competitors in quite a confused market, with people changing and talking about changing and kilowatt hours. And, you know, is there any way of simplifying the whole thing in the interests of the consumer?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I suppose people, It's a necessary purchase. It's almost, you know, some people say, you know, because of, you know, it results in a bill into the household. It's almost like an evil necessity. But you have to heat your home. You have to light your home. People are interested in it, though, because they do know and they do appreciate that they have a role. Everybody has a role to play in decarbonisation. And if they can use smart metering to try and reduce their energy usage, or if they can buy from a supplier who maybe are buying their electricity from local wind farms or solar farms, then that gets them engaged in the subject. In order to sort of outsmart or outperform versus competitors, first of all, you got to offer value, as simple as, because we all buy off the grid pretty much at the same price.
Yeah.
We all hedge in and around similar time periods. So you've got to make a good offer, but then you've got to hold on to the customer, because customers are, you know, switched on. They are willing to move supplier. There's no sense of I don't want to say loyalty. They want to be loyal, but they expect loyalty back from the supplier.
No,
so it's about customer retention.
It is interesting because, again, as you say, it's almost a hostile purchase in one sense, in that you have to have it. But again, keeping that consumer. But I think if you want to force change, or you want to, I suppose, get people to embrace change, the easiest way to do it is to give them something in their pocket.
Yeah, true. And whether that's something upfront or some form of loyalty payment, or a payment or a credit at the end of a period. Yeah, and these are all, I mean, not just ourselves, but a lot of the market are looking at tools like that. Well, I think it's moving as well away from customer service towards customer experience, which is it's more about how you make customers feel about you rather than what you actually do for them. So we're putting quite a bit of emphasis on that. And experience can be even right down to the initial sign-up experience. They see an ad, they like the ad. It's made them chuckle or laugh, like our current campaign is getting good feedback on their front. That's the start of the experience. Then we need to translate that into their first interaction with a customer agent up in Drogheda. And then, of course, in 12 months' time, when their contract's up, we get in touch with them to remind them that the contract is up. We want to move them to a new rate or an updated rate. It could be higher, lower, depending on the market. So if we can just enhance the whole experience, and otherwise, in between, just stay out of the way. Just get the bill right, make it accurate, and be available if they have a query. But that's our sense of what customers are looking for.
Energy's a bit like pensions. Nobody really wants to talk about it.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, but it's there. It's around us. And look, people do have an interest in it because, you know, we understand that the world needs to decarbonize, and energy users, as well as suppliers like ourselves, have a role to play in that.
Okay. Finally, can I just ask you, a personal question as well, but where do you see the energy market going? Is there going to be more players, less players? Is the price going to stabilize? It always seems to be in a bit of a state of flux.
Yeah, well, the last 3 years have just been in a real state of flux. Prior to that, the kind of price movements you would have got would have been, you know, +2%, +3%, or sometimes -2% or -3%, usually in line with gas prices, which were always, you know, maybe in and around 55p a therm, 50-50. Now they're at £10. You know, they're still double what they were prior to Ukraine. And yet, just when the Ukraine crisis kicked off, they had actually got up to £3, £4, £5 a therm, albeit for a short period. So huge amount of flux in the last few years. Where do I see it going? But I don't think it'll get back to where it was. I think it'll be a long time before Europe takes in Russian gas. The reality is that was the cheapest gas available. You know, I think as a region, the EU and a lot of the countries within just became a little bit hooked on Russian gas. And they actually moved away from things like nuclear in Germany towards Russian gas. So I think it'll be quite a while before we get back to those levels. I think now as well, as we move towards renewables, particularly on electricity, we are at the mercy of the elements. So today, the wind is blowing.
It's blowing too hard.
Yeah,
all the turbines shut down, don't they? When it gets over a certain...
Well, that's true, or the grid just can't cope. And they have to tell. So, you know, we do usually prefer gentle breezes rather than storms.
We'll have to leave it there, John. My guest is John Rooney, Managing Director of FlowGasR. And thanks for joining us today, John.
Great.
Wishing you every success in the future. And I'm afraid that's all we got time for today, folks. A huge thanks to our producer today, Simon Keane. John Fardy is away. He'll be back next week. Micheál O'Connell, Stephen Daunt were on research. Peter Malloy was on sound. Stay tuned for Off the Ball and have a wonderful, wonderful weekend.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11. on News Talk.
Stripe helps many of the world's most influential companies grow their revenue and build a more profitable business. Whether it's Hertz making checkout a smooth ride for their customers, OpenAI answering unprecedented demand, or PGA chipping away at back office inefficiency, Stripe's financial infrastructure platform helps companies achieve ambitious goals. No matter what success looks like for your business, Stripe helps ensure the complexity of financial systems doesn't get in your way. Learn more at stripe.com.